Avyaktam vyaktima pannam manyante mamabhuktaya param bhavam ajananto mamavyayam anuttamam. It appears that Lord Krishna is against the Hindu religion, because much of the Hindu religion consists of practices or ideas that are actually condemned in the Bhagavad Gita. Actually, there's no Hindu religion, according to Bhagavad Gita. We don't find in Bhagavad Gita that Lord Krishna says, "My dear Arjuna, let me explain to you the Hindu religion." He never tells Arjuna, "My dear Arjuna, you just become a Pakka Hindu." The Hinduism is not even mentioned in all the Vedic literature. So Hinduism is something of a little of this, a little of that, a little of this, a little of that. Almost, you can do this, you can worship the demigods and be a Hindu, you can worship Krishna and be a Hindu, you can worship Kali and be a Hindu, you can worship your ancestors and be a Hindu, you can do almost, you can worship Nirakar Brahma and be a Hindu. Almost anything. So that's all right. Hinduism is very broad, so broad that you can hardly say what it is and what it isn't. So Sanatana Dharma is something else. In the Bhagavad Gita, so in Hindu religion we find that any god you want to worship, that's all right. And you'll go to the same destination. So in the previous verses, Krishna has said this is all rubbish. Yanti deva vrata devan pitrin yanti pitri vrata bhutani yanti bhutejya yanti madhya janopi. You worship the particular deva, you go to the planet of that particular deva. If you worship the forefathers, you go to them. And if you worship me, you come to me. Not that whatever you do, whatever path you take, all roads lead to Rome, you'll always come to me. No. Similarly, generally, the idea is very widespread. In Hindu religion means that there's one absolute truth which has no name, no form, no qualities, no attributes, and again, you worship these different gods who all symbolize this absolute truth. They're all like doorways to this absolute truth or representations of this absolute truth. But they have no permanent existence. They're just to give you some idea to fix your mind on. And someone's attracted to this one, someone's attracted to that one. Whichever one you take, it doesn't matter, because in the ultimate issue, they lead to this impersonal absolute truth. Right? This idea is, we've heard before, or am I making it up? Who's heard this idea before? No one? Has anyone heard this before? That you just worship a particular god and then you get beyond that and you go to the impersonal Brahma? No one has heard this. No one's heard anywhere this idea before. Wow, we have a lucky group. No one's heard this. Everywhere else in the world I go, it's a very common idea. What? What's the problem? Let's take a vote. What do you want to do? What's going on? Temperature. Is the temperature okay? Is the door okay? Mobiles are okay. Everything else is all right.
Okay, continue. So here Lord Krishna condemns this idea. Avyakta means that which is not manifested. Avyakta. Avyakta means that's described actually in the 12th chapter. Again, this whole topic of the avyakta will be described. Aksharam anirdesham avyaktam paryupasate sarvatragam achintyam cha kutastha achalam dhruvam. The akshara, that which is beyond the senses, the anirdesha, it can't be, you can't pinpoint it. Avyakta, unmanifested. Sarvatraga, all pervading. Achintya, beyond thinking of. Kutastha, unchanging. Achalam, immovable. Dhruvam, fixed. So in this way we think of the absolute truth as a great supreme something. Something impersonal. No form. Nirakar. No form, no qualities, no this. And this is the supreme, and from that supreme comes at a lesser stage the Saguna Brahma. Nirguna Brahma is the supreme, no form, no quality. Then you get Saguna Brahma, Krishna, Brahma, Shiva, Ganesh, and so on. Which comes from this Nirguna Brahma. When Nirguna Brahma comes in touch with Maya, then you get Saguna Brahma. This is all rejected in Bhagavad Gita. Avyakta vyaktim apanya. That from the avyakta, from this nirakar brahma, apanna, I've obtained vyakti, the status of being a person. Who thinks this? Who thinks this about Krishna? Manyante mam abhutaya. Abhutaya, Prabhupada translates different ways in different times. Sometimes he says less intelligent. Actually, buddhi means intelligence. And abuddhi means the opposite. Exactly, just like we have indication and contraindication. It means just the opposite. Abuddhaya. Fools. In simple, plain language, fools.
Buddhiman or murk.
Huh?
Buddhiman or murk.
Murk, yes, and fools. In that category of fools come great Swamijis, great philosophers, great political leaders, great professors, great speakers, great katankars, great, so many greats. But according to Bhagavad Gita, they're great fools. Abhutaya. One time, one gentleman came to see Srila Prabhupada. He was an older gentleman. He met Prabhupada in New York. And he said, Swamiji, I like your movement very much, but one thing is that I heard that you said such and such person was a rascal. A quite well-known Swami. That you said he's a rascal. And I don't understand, because it seems to me that he's a very holy person. The Prabhupada said, who has said that I have said this? And the man said, you didn't say it? The Prabhupada said, if they are saying I have said, and I have not said, then he is rascal. No, then the man was very happy. And then Prabhupada pulled down a book from his bookcase, said to the man, you know this book? And the man looked at it and said, oh yes, Dr. Such and Such, from Such and Such Society. Prabhupada said yes. The man was very happy.
So Prabhupada opened the book to one verse. Manmana Pavamad Pakta Mad Yaji Mam Namaskuru Mami Vaishasi Satyam Te Pakijane Manmana Bhavabha. You simply think of me, become my devotee, worship me. So Prabhupada had, so what does he say, the translation? So the gentleman read the translation, that you simply think of me, become my devotee, worship me, offer your homage to me. Prabhupada said yes, he's a very good scholar. It was translated very nicely. Now commentary, what does he say? The man began reading. It is not to Krishna that one must surrender, but to the unborn, beginningless something within Krishna. Prabhupada said, just see. Therefore I say they are all rascals. Then Prabhupada said, it's not my saying. But Krishna says, namam duskritana mudha prapadyante naradham. Maya pratigyana asura pavamashita. Those who are not surrendering to me are duskritini, duskrita, miscreants, mudha, asses, naradama, the lowest among men. Maya pratigyana, those who've had their knowledge stolen by illusion, and asuri pavamashita, those who've taken shelter of a demonic mentality. Prabhupada said, it's not my saying, it's Krishna's saying. What can I do? This is a fact. That as far as Bhagavad Gita is concerned, these philosophies are accepted by the less intelligent. Maybe something is better than nothing. Those who are worshipping some demigod, at least they're worshipping. They're admitting that I'm not everything, something is there superior to me. So, alright, something is A. Dwarajan Gankara. Thank you.
If they wanted to play outside, they can play outside.
Outside or inside? But not this side. Where were we? Yeah. So something is better than nothing. You want to come through? Come on. Who else is coming? Okay, join the gang. Something is better than nothing. They're worshipping the demigods. At least they're accepting that there's someone superior. But they're not very clear about who's who. Who's in what position. Prabhupada gave the example that there was some lady, she needed some legal help, something. And somehow or other, the governor came to the town, came to the village, and he helped, he solved her problem. And so she was so grateful that she gave her blessings that may you become the chief of police.
Chief of police is nothing. He's the governor. But she was a, you know, simple person, didn't know. So gave her a blessing. May you become the chief of police. Similarly, the less intelligent person simply don't know that Krishna is Sarvaloka Maheshwara. He's the supreme controller of all the planets. Deva Deva Jagatpate. He's the Deva, the worshipable deity, even of the Devas. Devesha. He's the supreme Ishara of all of the gods. That they don't know. So they're worshipping some other god and they're thinking this is just as good. So similarly here, there are some people who are worshipping the Nirakar Brahma, God as formless, no name, no form, no qual. Alright, something is better than nothing. At least they're accepting there's an absolute truth. Therefore this was established by Shankaracharya. Because Lord Buddha came, actually these demigod worshippers so often, they're offering some animal to the deity, they're worshipping Kali, and they're offering goat. And without restriction, in the shastras, for those who are insistent on meat eating, there's some provision. On the dark moon night, you can kill one goat and offer to Kali, and you have to whisper into the ear of the goat that now I'm killing you, in the future you can kill me. So under some restriction it's allowed. But by the time of Lord Buddha, people were simply using it as a pretext for killing. Simply killing animals and eating. No restriction. So Lord Buddha rejected the shastras. And said, what are all these shastras with all these rituals, all this worship, all this animal sacrifice? We reject all these things. You should practice ahimsa, nonviolence. And he taught a doctrine in which there is no absolute truth. The world is a world of suffering, and you get free from suffering by dissolving your identity. Because suffering comes from desire. Desire comes from ego. So if you dissolve the ego, then there's no more desire, then there's no more suffering. Of course, then there's no more you also. So it's a kind of spiritual suicide. So Shankaracharya defeated Buddhist philosophy and reestablished the authority of the Vedas. But to do it, he made a compromise. He taught a kind of philosophy in which the absolute truth has no form, has no quality. So practically it's not much different from Buddhism. It's like covered Buddhism. Buddhists say God is nothing, there's only void, shunyavad. And the Shankara philosophers say that there's God, but God has no form, no qualities, no name, no. That means practically shunya. So he's teaching practically the same philosophy. But in Bhagavad Gita, this philosophy also is very clearly rejected. Avyaktam vyaktim apanyam manyante mam abhutaya. Shankaracharya had to do it for a particular purpose, but it's not correct. It's accepted by the less intelligent. Param bhavam ajanam. They don't understand my actual nature, my supreme nature. Mama avyayam anuttama. Avyaya means Krishna is inexhaustible. Materially, everything is exhausted. You have 100 rupees, you spend 20 rupees, 20, soon it's zero. Or we have this body, It grows, it stays for some time, then it dwindles and finally finished. But Krishna is not like that. He is inexhaustible. Something like the sun is putting out energy since time immemorial, and we're not seeing that the sun is getting smaller, the sun is running out of energy, the sun is weaker. It's practically an inexhaustible source of energy. Now there's a problem. We've been using so much petroleum, so stocks are getting exhausted. We have to invade this country or that country to get more petroleum because the source is exhaustible. But the Krishna is inexhaustible. He's inexhaustible. Avyaya. What is that? Purna mada purna midam purna purna udachate. You subtract anything from Krishna, he remains complete. This is Krishna. That no matter how much is subtracted from Krishna, Krishna remains 100%. Therefore he is avyayam and anuttama. He is the supreme personality of Godhead. Purusham Shashvatam Divyam. That's described in the 8th chapter, I think. Kavim Purana Manushashitaram Anur Niyamsa Anusmarejya. Then Sarvasya Dhataram Achintya Rupa Aditya Varnam Tamasa Parastam. This is Krishna. He should be thought of as the supreme person. Paramam Purusham Divyam Yati Partham Chintayam. That's also there. Purusham Shashvatam Divyam. Supreme, inexhaustible, transcendental person. Purusha. I'm a person, you're a person. Prabhupada gives simple logic. Your father was a person, his father, his father, his father. You come to the original source. Is he impersonal? All my ancestors were persons, but the original ancestor is impersonal? No. The original source is also a person, but not a person like us in the material world. Anuttama, Abhyayam, Param. This is Krishna. The Prabhupada makes many valuable points here. Pantastu koti satavat sadasam pragamyo payoratapi manaso munipungama. So pyasti yat prapadasim nyabachintya tatve govindamari purusham tamam. Why are they thinking that Krishna is impersonal? Because they're trying to figure him out by their own speculative power. What is that speculative power? It's the power of the mind. What is the power of the mind? Material power. The mind is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita as being one of the material energies. That means limited and imperfect. So with the limited and imperfect mind, we're trying to understand the unlimited. Naturally, we're understanding wrong. How will the limited, imperfect mind understand the unlimited, perfect, absolute truth? It said, even if you travel at the mental speed for thousands of years, you won't reach even the tip of the toe of Govinda. They try to understand him this way, that the absolute is not this, the absolute is not that, the absolute is not this, not that. So they wind up with a big list of knots, but they don't know positively what he is. For that we have to hear. That's, Prabhupada mentioned that here also. Atapite deva padam bhajam padambujam tvaya prasada leshanu grihite janati tatvam bhagavan mahimno nachanya ekopi chiram vichinvan. Lord Brahma prayed that, my dear Lord, your glories are not understandable simply by mental speculation.
you can be understood prasadale shanugrihite, by one who's caught even a fragment, a little fraction of your mercy. Prasadale shanugrihite. Not chanya eko pichanam, not simply by thinking and thinking and thinking and thinking for a long, long time. No. We have to get a little of Krishna's mercy. How do we? The mercy of Krishna comes especially from the devotee of Krishna. Yes. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasada. If we get the mercy of a pure devotee, then we'll get the mercy of Krishna. Krishna is represented by his pure devotee. There's so many examples, just like Narada Muni is a pure devotee. So then by his mercy, the Vyasdev gets pure devotional service, Prahlad gets pure devotional service, Valmiki gets pure devotional service. Dhruva Maharaj gets pure devotional service. So many, by the grace of a pure devotee, they also get pure devotional service. This is the method. Prasada leshanu grihite elihi. Janati tattvam bhagavan. Then one can understand actually. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tattvata. Another point Prabhupada makes, that people have this idea that the absolute truth is formless and that Krishna is only, but in the Bhagavad Gita it's very clear, Yanti Deva Vrata Deva. If you worship a particular Deva, you'll go to the planet of that Deva. That means these Devas are not imaginary. It's not that after death you go to some imaginary place, fairyland. You think this Bhagavad Gita is teaching something like that? That after you die, you'll go to fairyland? The greatest philosophers in the world are commenting on Bhagavad Gita, reading Bhagavad Gita, and it's a fairy story? You worship something and you go to fairyland? He's explaining fact. There are devas, more powerful living beings who are controlling different parts of material nature. We may not see them, but the ants don't see us. For the ants, human beings are mythology. If you try to explain to an ant that, you know, sometimes so many other ants are dying all at once, really it's because some man has stepped on them with his shoe, they'll say, shoe? What is the shoe? Man? What is this man? Because what can the tiny ant understand about human society? You tell the ant, no, it's a big problem. There are factories that are turning out, you know, what are they, Lakshman Rekha and Raid and, you know, all of these different ant-killing things. You have to do something. The ant, you say, what are you talking about? He won't understand. So we don't understand the demigods. We may think we understand, but we don't understand. But as there are creatures greater than the ants, there are creatures greater than us. So they're the demigods, and they have their places. Indraloka, Chandraloka, Arunaloka. Lord Shiva has his place, Kailash. There's so many actual places, and if you worshipped a particular demigod, you go there, to that place. Of course, they're all temporary places. Brahma Bhuvana Loka Purnarvartina. Even if you go to Brahma Loka, you have to come back. But it's a place. That means these are real people, the demigods, with real abodes. And if you worship a particular demigod, you go to his particular place. Then how is Krishna just imaginary? Krishna is also a real person with a real place, but the difference is yad gatva Nanivartante tadhama paramam. The place where he lives is permanent. The places where the demigods after all, they're just living beings like us in more powerful positions. But Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. He is eternal, his abode is eternal, and if you go there, you stay eternally. He's Sanatan, his place is Sanatan, and because we're Sanatan, we're also meant to be in that supreme place, in that supreme association, engaged in the supreme activity, which is service to Krishna. That's Sanatan Dharma. Sarva dharman pratyajya manekam sharanam. This is actual dharma, Sanatan Dharma. So this is explained in the Bhagavad Gita in many places and in many different ways. So we have to catch it up and understand it carefully. That will be good. All right, are there some questions? Any questions?
Hinduism exists, but what it is, nobody knows.
So how we got into existence? And like today, people don't discriminate Hindu, Muslim, in particular religion. How did Hinduism got into existence?
How Hinduism had actually got started by the British. They had to somehow conceptualize what was going on in India, so they called it Hinduism. Actually, this Hindu word was already there, given by the people from Afghanistan, Baluchistan, from the river Sindhu. Just like they say, instead of Sindhu, they said Hindu. Just like a lot of people say United States. Right? It's not natural for them to say United States, they'll say United States. So these people, they don't say Sindhu, they say Hindu. So all the people living by that river or south of that river, they're Hindus. But what are they doing? Everything. You know, just like if we talk about American religion. What is American religion? It's everything. It's Christianity, it's Judaism, it's devil worship, it's, you know, anything, everything and everything goes on there. America. So India also, everything goes on. In the villages, there's always some, you know, shocking headline that somebody has, somebody in a remote village killed 14 people and cut them up and offered their body to some ghost or something, right? Isn't there, you know, some sort of primitive religious idea?
Or you could call them blind faith or something.
Call them?
Blind faith.
Yeah. Well, blind faith, definitely it is. But I just mean to say, all sorts of practices are going on under this. Even if you go, some people, now are the Sikhs Hindus or are they not Hindus? Some people will say, yes, the Sikhs are also Hindus. Then even some people will say the Buddhists are also Hindus.
Jains are
the Jains are also Hindus. Then only basically anything but the Muslims are Hindus. Right?
Yes.
Then there's some people, they'll say, no, no, the Jains aren't Hindus. All the others are Hindus, but not the Jains, or not the Sikhs, or not, you know, depending where you are. But it's not very clearly, because it's in the Shastra, it's not even there.
Yeah.
So it's just influenced by this idea of religion. That what religion do you belong to? We ask, what religion do you belong to? Someone says, oh, I'm Christian. I'm Sikh. I'm Jain. I'm Muslim. So then someone says, I'm Hindu. But actually these are all designations. And real Sanatan Dharma means to get free from all these designations. Not to join a particular designation. Actually Sanatan Dharma is the religion that you can't join. Because it's Sanatan.
It's permanent. It's the eternal quality of the living being. You can't pick up an eternal quality, you already have it. It's just a question of uncovering it. So that eternal function is devotional service to the Supreme Lord. That's the actual religion. The Sanatan, these are all Asanatan dharmas. I'm Christian, I'm Hindu, I'm Jain, I'm this. The person who is Hindu and throwing rocks at the Muslims dies thinking of the Muslims and comes back as a Muslim. You know, these people who are, and the Muslims who are thinking of killing some Christian, they come back as a Christian. Huh? So this is temporary. Or even in this life, the Muslim converts to Christianity, the Christian converts to Islam, the Muslim converts to something else. So these are temporary designations. But the real designation is Krishna Das. Jivir Sharupoy Krishner Nitya Das. The eternal constitution of a living being is that he's a servant of Krishna or God. That's Sanatana Dharma. And if you want to say a religion, that the religion of India is Varnashram. Religion means some system that promotes this thing. So in India, the traditional system of cultivation is Varnashram. That everyone has a particular social position, everyone has a particular occupation, according to this system of Varna and Ashram. That's there. But if you try to explain that, no, I want to know what religion you belong to. You see? Yeah, church on Sunday. Well, you know, on Sunday, what do you go to? What building do you go to? That question. That's their conception. This is a much broader thing, much deeper thing. Okay. But then these things are manipulated, especially by politicians, to create for their own advantage, to create some dissension. And then as a result of that dissension, win votes and spend money. So someone is standing for Hindutva, someone is standing against Hindutva, someone is for, you know, something. And they're simply taking advantage of people's false designations. That someone is thinking, I'm Hindu, so I'll vote for this person because he's in favor of Hindutva. Someone's thinking, I'm not Hindu, so I'm going to vote against the Hindutva. And someone's calculating whether there are more Hindutva people or anti-Hindutva people. And, you know, and then they adjust their message. Well, I'm neutral. I'm, you know, depending which way the polls are going. But they're thinking of how to manipulate people's sentiments. And we want to get people revved up. We want to invade a particular country, so we find some religious, you know, and therefore people are under the impression there's so many wars fought on account of religion. Don't we hear that all the time? That the whole world is fighting over religion. And it's nonsense. It's not true. The war in Iraq is not about religion. The war in Afghanistan was not about religion. Vietnam War was not about religion. World War II was not about religion. World War I was not about religion. Korean War was not about religion. The fighting between the so-called Catholics and Protestants in Ireland is not about religion. It's about other issues entirely. But it's convenient to say that it's about religion. So all of this, you know, religion is, it's simply some manipulation. Prabhupada said, call the dog a bad name and hang him. You know, so we'll say, oh, radical Islam is a threat to the world. So we go after those people. Simply greedy politicians manipulating simple people. That's all.
The violence in Gaza is not religious?
Gaza, no, it's not. In fact, I go to Israel. I haven't gone lately, but I used to go quite often. You go to say Tel Aviv, And it's not at all a place of, like the Middle East, there are actually much more, religion is much more prominent than in Tel Aviv. Like you go to Dubai, there's so many mosques and you know, people have beads in their hands and they're quite serious about it. My experiences in Tel Aviv, what they're very serious about is living like Americans. You know, with so many very materially high standard of material enjoyment. In fact, there's some people, the so-called very religious Jews, the people who wear the special clothing and everything. And they'll do things like if you drive your car on the Sabbath, then they'll throw rocks at your cars. And the majority of the people hate them. Hey, we want to drive our cars and enjoy. And who these guys are spoiling our fun. So actually the number of very serious religious people is quite minority. They're serious about their property, the country that got for themselves. They're serious about their ethnic association. I'm Jewish, but not because it means something religiously, but it means something in terms of a particular ethnic group, just like Arab. Arab is not a religion. Arab is an ethnic designation. So there's Arabs and there's Jews. And it doesn't matter what religion they belong to, but this is my property. No, it's my property. No, it's my property. No, it's my property. Actually, it's God's property. And these people, so-called Jews and so-called Arabs, are two groups of thieves who have stolen property from God and are insisting, this is my part, this is my part. But they're both thieves, that's all. Doesn't belong to either party. It has very little to do with religion. Even, I was told that the very serious Jews, they believe that it will not be time to go back to Israel till the Messiah comes. You're like the next avatar. When the next avatar comes, that's when we're supposed to go back to Israel. So the most devout Jews aren't even there. Because they think, no, it's not right for us to be there until the Messiah comes. Anyway, what you really find there are politicians, people making money, people interested in sense gratification, people identifying, this is my property, this is my property, this is my property. And the religious component is very... If people are actually religious, then they don't fight over religion. You'll see, these people are engaged in serving Allah. Who is Allah? Allah is God. And these people are engaged in serving Jehovah. Who is Jehovah? Jehovah is God. So why are we fighting against people because they're serving God and I'm serving God? Only if they're the most prakritabhakta. Prakritabhakta means, all right, he's devoted to God, but he's devoted to God on such a low level of realization that he thinks God is practically my property. He's staying in my mosque, or he's staying in my temple, or he's staying in my church, but he's not in that temple, he's not in that mosque, he's not in that church. And they don't recognize other devotees. Simply they recognize it's all between me and God, or very little small group and God. They don't see the broader, that God is, Krishna says, Sarvabhutana, I'm in the heart of everyone. Suridam Sarvabhutana, I'm the best friend of all living beings. Krishna never says, I'm the best friend of all Hindus. Or all human beings even. He's friendly to the ant, he's friendly to the cow, he's friendly to the everyone. They have a very crippled sense. And the wars are not about religion. There's Gulf Wars. What does it have to do with religion? Nothing. Is that okay?
Any other questions?
so. We'll take some more questions, maybe.
Yeah, we can take more questions. The Vedic era, if you say that the Vedic era, there is no idealization of the God. If you say that it is same to the Sanatana Dharma, in the Vedic era, there is no praying to the ideals.
Who said? Vedic era means when, first of all? When you say Vedic era, what do you mean?
The practice of...
No, when you say Vedic era, when do you mean?
Before this idealization of the Lord started in the...
No, but when is that? Yeah. What do you mean by that? Vedic era?
The Vedas have come first. Vedas have come first.
Yeah. What are they thinking? Vedas first, then Puranas, then all that? These things are material conceptions. What's going on? These things are material conceptions. Actually, four eras are there. Satyug, Tretayug, Dwapara-yug, Kali-yug. In Satyug, actually there's no deity worship because there's no need. Actually, Krishna is everywhere. But he's there in the temple so that you can see him. Because our spiritual vision is not that Krishna is everywhere, but just like the soul is everywhere. Can you see soul? No. It's like your soul, but I don't see soul. I see your body. Because my vision is like that, I can only see, you know, material elements. I can see skin, I can see, but I can't see spirit, because spirit's very fine. So, I have material vision, I can see the walls, but I can't see God. But in Satya Yuga, they could see. Dhyana avastita tad gateena manasa pashanti yamyogi. In Satya Yuga, they were all yogis. And by practicing yoga, they could actually see. Not theoretically, but they could actually see God in the heart. So when you can see, then you don't need a temple. Temple is to provide facility for those who can't see. For those who can't see God, God consents that, all right, I'll be visible in the form made of wood, made of metal, made of... But for the yogis, there was no need. Because they could actually see. It's like we're keeping a picture of someone. But if you could see that person 24 hours a day, you don't need the picture. So Kriteya Dhyayato Vishnu. Then afterwards, of course, sometimes there was deities were there, but actually in Satyug there was no need, and nobody would even do the puja because they were doing meditation. What puja will I do when I'm in meditation all the time? We read they're meditating 20,000 years, 40,000 years. So what is the need of puja? Or where's the question of puja? Then next age is sacrifice. Next age is temple worship. Dwapara Yuga. Of course, Dwapara Yuga means it began how many years? It ended 5,000 years ago. How many hundreds of thousand years before that? How long? What's the period of Dwapara Yuga?
864,000
years. So, for that long, the temple worship was there. Temple means Murti Puja. So they were doing these things. Big time. Now temple worship is neglected. If you go, say, to Tamil Nadu, there's so many big, big temples. Most, and a few headline temples are very, you know, well maintained. But mostly they're neglected. You know, it used to have so much land, then the land was taken by the government. It used to have so many pujaris, so many things, and now it's practically, you know, just an old site with
bats living in it and some sign, this site is protected by the Archaeological Survey of India, fine for doing this, that. But no one is going. Some old men are doing some puja. Their sons are going to, you know, studying engineering in America. And the thing is finished, practically. Because in Kali Yuga, the temple worship is no longer compelling. Kalo tad hari kirtana. In Kali Yuga, the kirtan is the thing. Even still, the deity is there. And in Treta Yuga, the worship of the deity was the main thing. In Kali Yuga, the deity is present in the form of Harinam. That's the main. And even our deity worship, our main worship is by Harinam. Is that alright? This idea that the deity worship is only, you know, something coming recently. No. Otherwise, who was it? Sita Devi was keeping the deity of Lord Ramchandra? Who's keeping? Hanuman keeping the deity of Lord Ramchandra. So how far back is that? Is that the Vedic age? The idea that this is a recent introduction is a recent introduction. Is that okay? Dhruva Maharaj. It's mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam. He made a deity. Isn't it described like that? That Dhruva Maharaj was advised to make a deity of the Lord and worship that. He did it. Not a new thing. Not at all. Something else?
Maharaj, it is said in Gita that Krishna says to Arjuna, when you, like, anybody comes to our spiritual platform, so there's no cycle of birth and death. Like Mama Peta to Kaunte, for example. And it is also said that we have come from that universe only to this universe because of our some desires. So
yes.
The question is, like, we are in the, like, Sachidanam, everybody is all blissful and all active and all knowledgeable in that universe. So how the desire comes to enjoy...
You'll never figure it out. Therefore it's said, anadi bahirlokji. Since time immemorial, we're in this material world. In the spiritual world, there's no time. So how do you go from a place where there's no time to a place where there's time? And at what time did you fall from a place where there's no time? You can't figure it out. On what date did I fall from the place that has no time? Right? These things cannot be figured out. We just have to accept that since time immemorial, we've been in this material world, and that we're not in our constitutional position. Is that okay? Something else?
Is that your question?
Huh?
What was your question?
Question was like when we were in that spiritual universe, how the desire comes actually, because it is all the...
That was the question. Ask Maharaj how the first desire came.
I know. But you'll not figure it out. There's no good reason. How do you get... Why should a person turn against Krishna? What reason? He became unreasonable. It's not reasonable. It's unreasonable. So for what reason does a person become unreasonable? No good reason. You can't figure it out.
One more question. Like as you said, we should when you worship the Lady God, so we go to that planet. Suppose somebody is fixed in that worship of that demigod in terms of the absolute truth, like treating as supreme. So whether that demigod will direct that person towards supreme or what will happen?
That's mentioned in the... It's assumed, actually, if you don't have faith in that demigod, you can't go to that demigod. So everyone is thinking, my demigod is supreme. That's how you go. But it doesn't mean that because you're worshipping as him as supreme, therefore he is the supreme. And therefore going to him is as good as going to the supreme. Everyone's thinking, what I'm doing is the best. That doesn't mean it is the best. The person who's robbing from the government, he's thinking he's doing, you know, good, something good. It doesn't make it good. No, it was, Your Honor, I was doing a good thing. I stole, I robbed from the bank, but it was for my family. It was the right thing to do. I had to do it, Your Honor. The judge doesn't say, no, all right, and now I understand, you had to do it. So actually it was legal. Judge says, you know, this is nonsense. So similarly, someone is thinking, I'm worshipping this demigod because, or this god because he's supreme. By worshipping him, I'm going to the ultimate.
Huh?
No. Now, because he's accepted the principle of higher authority, he may gradually, but he's on the slow boat. He's on the very slow boat.
To advance in spiritual knowledge, one of the requirements is you have to take initiation from the Guru. So what are the things you have to do before take initiation from minimum requirements?
What are the things that we have to do before taking initiation from the Guru? First thing is you have to have faith in the Guru. That means you have to have examined the Guru and have reasonable confidence that he's qualified Guru, Pramanic Guru. Otherwise, just out of sentiment, everyone has a Guru, everyone else is initiated, I should also be initiated, I should also have a Guru, you know, just to keep up with others. That's not sensible. That's not the idea. Everyone has a guru, I should also have a guru. I should be tasmad gurum prapadyeta jigyasu shreya uttama. When I'm seriously inquisitive about the ultimate goal of life, then I have reason to approach a guru. Not that the guru is for my, you know, like a decoration. I have a nice house, I have a nice wife, I have nice children, but I don't have a guru. Not like that. But when I'm seriously inquisitive about my ultimate purpose in life, then gurum prapadyeta. Prapadyeta means one has to surrender. Shishyasteyam sharimam tam prapanyam. Now I surrender. Surrender means, that's a big thing, to surrender. So I have to have confidence that this person to whom I'm surrendering is worthy of surrender. He won't mislead me, he won't cheat me. How's that? Then he has to be actually representing Krishna. Shabde pare janishnat brahmani samupamashri. He has to have heard from his guru and be repeating the same thing. And he actually has to be fully engaged in the service of the Lord. That kind of guru. So when I have confidence that yes, I've met someone who actually is qualified and I'm prepared to surrender to him, then I should approach the Guru. And as for initiation, it's said that one should, Jiva Goswami says, one should examine the qualities of that person. At least for 1 year, the disciple should examine the Guru. Is he the person in whom I have, who's deserving of my surrender? And the guru should also examine the disciple. Is this person a, you know, simply a materialist, opportunist, trying to take advantage? Or is he sincerely searching for the absolute truth? So then, yes, when they're satisfied, then there's this question of initiation. One has to be ready to follow the orders of the guru. That I accept the guru, but I won't do what he says, is nonsense. So, in our Krishna consciousness movement, we have four rules. No intoxication, no meat eating, no illicit sex, no gambling, and positively, chanting 16 rounds every day. One has to be able to follow, ready to follow these rules and regulations. Otherwise, again, there's no point of initiation. Better not to, you know, because one has to promise that I'll do all these things for the rest of my life. So if I promise and then I don't do it, then that's an aparad. I have to, and it's also pointless. What's the use of spending money going to the doctor and then when he gives the prescription, I don't take it? That means I didn't actually have faith in the doctor. Otherwise I would have said, all right, I don't want to take this medicine. It tastes bad, or it's too expensive, or it has side effects. But if I have faith, no, the doctor has prescribed it, then I'll take it. Someone has to be willing to follow. The guru means he's giving the instructions, what you have to do to become purified and go back home, back to Godhead. So after coming in touch with the guru, if you're not going to follow his instructions, then why take initiation? Just like sometimes someone would ask Prabhupada a question, challenging question. Prabhupada said, if I give you the answer, will you accept it? Will you believe me? And that would call the person's bluff, because the answer would be no. I'm only asking to challenge you. I'm not going to accept your answer. So therefore one has to approach the guru not with a challenging attitude, but pranipatena, submissively, and sevaya, ready to give service. Then pariprashna, one can ask the questions. One has to have that mood. Yes, I'm ready to surrender. I have my questions. I have confidence that I'll get the right answer, and whatever he tells me, that I'll do. The university education, if you don't have faith in the professors and you're not prepared to do the work, why spend money and enroll? It's a waste of time. But when you're convinced that I have to have this degree and this is the institution, these professors are highly qualified, and the work, by doing this work, I'll actually get the credential. No. Isn't that all right? Actually, initiation is required, just as enrollment is required. If you want to get education, you can't just, you know, read books. You have to enroll and take the courses and do the tests and sit for the exams. Then you get education. So to get enlightenment in Krishna consciousness, initiation is required. But I should be serious, right, in the project.
Following the last 3 years,
I think I know
all these courses.
Yes, then. Yeah, and you can. Then you're the eligible candidate. Okay. I think time for the RT. Thank you all very much.